Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of Tom Lucy Plus One, the podcast. My name is Tom Lucy. I'm 21 years old, and I'm a stand-up comedian. And I'm recording this backstage at a sweltering hot Latitude festival. I'm going on stage in about an hour to perform to a few thousand hot, sweaty, middle-class countryside folk. What better way to spend a Saturday afternoon? This episode is the first time that we've actually had two guests on the show, sort of changing the name of the podcast. But I'm talking to Ferris and Sylvester, who are a brilliant and highly tipped musical duo. I've known Izzy for a long time, actually. We went to school together, and I think they're so good. And they're already doing amazingly well, and they are very much on the way up in the music business. So I went round to their flat in South London and we had a chat, and here it is, my chat with the brilliant Ferris and Sylvester. Yeah, you spend a lot of, when you tour with someone, I don't know if it's the same with music. I think maybe you're a bit more separated, but you spend a lot of time with whoever you're touring with.
We're much more separated if you're touring with somebody.
Yeah.
If you're lucky, if they have a big tour bus and there's space, they might let you on. But we end up touring separately. It's just the two of us in the car most of the time.
Yeah.
And that has its own challenges.
I've heard stories about musicians who support people and they never meet them.
Oh yeah.
And they go on, do their stuff, come off, and they're not allowed near whoever they're supporting.
We've had that.
George Ezra, we did meet, but
George
is
a really good guy.
We weren't allowed anywhere near his dressing room.
What, you were told that, or
his dressing room was like on the other side of the building.
Yeah. Well, no, he didn't say that.
No, just, no, that's not his choice.
But we went to when we supported George Ezra, we went to the after party.
Yeah.
And he made a point of fanning us and saying thank you so much for playing. He was a good guy.
Really yeah, nice yeah, stuff. He's a nice guy.
But some people you don't meet.
Some people you just don't meet. It doesn't mean they're wankers.
I've heard a really funny story about Jesse Ware. Did Jesse Ware?
Yeah.
She was asked to sing on stage at the O2 with Nicki Minaj.
I think it was
her. Someone like that. And they'd never met before. And Nicki Minaj's manager just asked Jesse Ware's manager, can Jesse come on and sing this song with her at her show at the O2? So Jesse arrived, didn't meet Nicki before the gig, was in the dressing room really far away, and someone kept coming in and saying, so you'll be on at 9:37, that's okay? And she was like, yeah, I'm gonna chat practice about the song with Nicki, or practice. And they were like, no, you've got the lyrics right, you'll be fine. So she went on, and the first time she met Nicki Minaj was on stage in the O2 Arena. And then afterwards she came off and she didn't even talk to her afterwards.
Oh my god. So
the only time
she
ever spent with her was those 3 minutes on stage.
How did they decide who was gonna sing what?
I guess it was all pretty.
Like, Nicki Minaj is like she's a rapper, isn't she? Really? Yeah. Right. So I guess
they're very different. I don't really know how that works.
No. But James Blunt we didn't meet. Gary Barlow we didn't meet.
Oh, how was the James that was at the Chelsea Hospital?
It was great. He was hilarious. He did his encore, and during his encore, his kids and his wife and all his mates were getting into like a massive car.
Yeah.
He did his last song, literally ran off the stage into the car. Zoop, bye. Like,
it's very showbiz, isn't it?
Very showbiz.
So is he? We could have interrupted him when he came off the stage because we could get backstage.
Yeah.
But Izzy was sitting there. Izzy was trying to get me to sit there to like literally grab him.
No, not grab him. Just say hello. Thank you. Not to grab him.
He's only small.
Yeah.
Pick him up. Give
him a kiss. Who's the best person that you guys? Because you've supported a lot of people.
Mm.
Yeah.
Who's the best person you've supported?
I don't know. Like in terms of gig or like the person.
Like the best fun you've had supporting someone.
The best fun was probably Justin Azuka.
Yeah, Robert Plant was funny. When we supported Robert Plant, that was at the Bath Fest about 6 weeks ago, and it was funny because it was a good day for us because Bath is local to where I grew up.
Yeah.
So my whole family were there, and it's at the Rick, which is the rugby ground, and believe it or not, I actually used to play rugby when I was much younger. And the only time I'd ever been to the Rec was in the final of the Somerset Under-18s Cup, playing for Wellington Rugby Club. And we were winning, and then I got sent off for 10 minutes to go, and we lost. So that's the only...
You've got bad memories of the Rec.
Yeah, and that was pretty much the end of my rugby career.
Did you have a flashback on stage?
Yeah, well, I said on stage, this is the first time I've been back. So hopefully...
So I shouted, fuck off, ref!
So I said, hopefully there's no red cards around. And some bloke in the audience, well, I was wearing a red suit, and he went, yeah, there is your red suit! Oh, cheers, mate. But so we were backstage and my whole family was there and just having a drink. It was a really lovely day. And our manager arranged for us to meet Robert Plant.
Oh, wow.
Which was really cool. So he came into our dressing room on his way to the stage, and we had a quick chat with him. He was a lovely bloke. Really didn't need to come in and say hello to us, but you know, it really made our day. And then my dad and my uncle were in the dressing room. They were kind of around the corner, so they'd heard that Robert Plant was going to come in. And bearing in mind that for them, and for us, but more definitely for them, Robert Plant is an idol. He is sort of the consummate rock star. And I thought that they would be cool if Robert Plant was in the room. And they both came around the corner and completely lost their shit that Robert Plant was in the room. It was actually really funny. Like, you always,
that's quite nice that you got to give that to your dad, though, I guess.
Well, it was really nice, except then so dad's sort of, I don't know, normally he's just the most chilled out bloke ever, take him wherever, but Robert Plant, it was maybe just a little bit too much. And he goes, so Robert Plant is a big Wolves fan. So my dad is a football fan. He's a Crystal Palace fan. And Wolves have just got promoted to the Premier League this season.
Yeah.
And so my dad saw that was his opportunity to talk to Robert Plant about Wolves. And he goes, and he said, sort of heckling from the other side of the room, "Oi, Robert, giving us six points next season. Yeah, thanks for that. And then
I'm surprised your dad wasn't like shocked or taken out by something.
Well, he probably would have been if he'd carried on. And then he goes, Robert Plant goes, "Oh yeah, well, Palace did quite well this season, but that's only because of that old bastard manager you've got." And my dad goes, "Oh yeah, well, you old bastard, well, you better fucking get yourself together because you've got to go stage on in a minute." So my dad called Robert Plant an old bastard, and Robert Plant made his way out of the room.
That's not great.
Too long after that.
So, never let your parents backstage, ever.
No,
I learned that quite early on. My parents are so desperate. I don't know what they think. Nothing interesting really happens backstage.
No.
Desperate to come backstage.
Oh my God, yesterday at BST, I was like, bear in mind that story's about Greg, Archie's dad and brother.
Yeah.
Who are really good fun.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh God, you know, that was quite funny, but maybe we should tone it down next time. And then yesterday at BST, I was like, "Archie, what are you doing?" He's like, "Oh, I'm just swapping my artist wristband with my uncle and dad so they can get backstage." I was like, "God's sake, what's wrong with you guys? Like, we're gonna get chucked out of here in a second because they're just like amazing wristband swapping." And then Archie's uncle just tightened it on.
Whenever you get a wristband, never put it on too tight. Just have it as loose as possible.
Yeah, so you can take it off
and give it to somebody if you need to. Don't. Obviously, no promoters are going to be listening to this.
Yeah.
So I did that, and then so we were sitting having lunch, and I took mine off and gave it to my uncle, and I gave it to my dad to give to my uncle so he could come into the backstage area. Like you say, there wasn't really anything to see, but we were right next door to Carlos Santana's caravan, so that was cool.
It's like some sort of weird dreamless.
Steve Winwood was over there, Eric Clapton was over there, Santana was over there. They're just caravans with their names on. Inside. But that was cool for my uncle and my dad to see. So I said to Dad, give this to Fabe, who's my uncle. Just make sure he doesn't tighten it because I need to get it back.
Yeah.
So Joe goes, yeah, okay. Gives it to Fabe. Apparently he goes, "Don't." Fabe's already tightened it. Tightened it like really tight on his fucking wrist.
Yeah.
And then he came in. He's like, "Oh yeah. Sorry about that." he had a sense of humour, Fabe. Yeah,
I did, because that. I was like, for God's sake, it's always the parents. My mum, like, we came off stage. And the guys were like, "Right, guys, because we don't have a tour manager or anything, because it's just the two of us, and we're quite fast at getting all our gear kind of sorted."
Yeah.
And so for now, it kind of works out, just the two of us and whatever manager's there that day. But, the guys were like, "Come on, let's get your stuff off. It's a quick changeover." And my mum shouted across the stage, like, "Izzy! Oh my God, Izzy, come over here. Floods of tears, like trying to get backstage without a wristband. I was like, "Oh my God," like.
It's great.
But I love it. Great, I love
though.
It.
Yeah. It's
my dad last year, I did Latitude last year, and my mum and dad came just for the day I was doing. And I came, I think I was on at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I came off and I was sitting in this little, like, shitty little trailer that they give the comedians. It's like much worse than the musicians. And I was sitting in there, and my dad, the door just swung open, and my dad just walked in. He was like, "That was great." I was like, how the fuck did you get it? And he was like, there's like three levels of security to get into the, not even to get backstage, but to get into the area where the trailers are. It's like three levels of security, and you need two wristbands.
What did he just say?
A warmer's one and a backstage one.
I'm Tom's dad.
And I said, "How the fuck did you get in here?" And he said, "I just told them I was your manager and everybody let me through." But he looks very, my dad looks, he's very good at lying, and he also looks like the sort of man who would work He looks quite official.
That's good.
So I can imagine if he walks up to security and was really confident, they would be like, oh, okay.
You see, my dad was yesterday was sporting a Ferris and Sylvester t-shirt and a cap worn backwards to protect his neck from sunburn.
You're like one of those mental fans that was going to hurt you.
I actually saw your dad when we were on stage, and I didn't realise it was him at first. I was like, there's a bloke wearing a cap backwards with a Ferris and Sylvester t-shirt. He's
My uncle, the first night of the Jack Whitehall tour when I was doing support, the first night in Brighton, I was really nervous. My uncle came to watch, and I came out on stage, and it was like a big gig, and it was the first night. And I said hello, and my uncle from about the fifth row went, "Where's Jack?" I was like, "You're heckling me in my first..." He thought it'd be funny to shout, "Where's Jack?" And I was like, I can't understand why you think that's acceptable.
No.
And then he cracked up laughing with my auntie.
Oh,
they thought
God.
That was hilarious.
Yeah, we've been heckled by family as well.
I think they all find it really funny. That
who's
is really
that?
Good.
Yeah. Who's this imposter?
Who's this prick? I paid for you.
And everybody around him obviously had no idea that.
No, and because it's my uncle, I didn't even like say anything back because I'm not gonna have a chat with my uncle.
No.
So I just ignored it, and it looked like I was such an amateur because someone shouted, "Where's Jack?" and I just ploughed on.
My favorite thing when we came and saw you at Top Secret was when you were talking to this to someone in the audience who was like not playing ball, and he was really annoying, and his friend was a bit better. And every time you looked at them, I was in your eye line, and I was suddenly one of those people. I was like, "Tom, hi, I'm here.
Hello.
You're so good." I'm trying to catch your eye. And I was like, I hate it when people do that when I'm on stage. And I became one of those people.
Find when family and friends come, I mean, I guess it's a big crowd, so you might not, but... if you see someone you know in the audience, does it put you off?
I spot them instantly. Yeah. Instantly. I don't know how or why, but I can always, when we're in a big crowd, I'm always aware of
even
where they
like
are.
Even like a big festival or something,
yeah.
You see.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like James Blunt was, what, like, I didn't see them at Gary Barlow, but James Blunt was 6,000 people.
Yeah.
And I knew where they were instantly. I was just like, they're all there.
Yeah, they are, he's got in a Ferris and Sylvester t-shirt.
I think you just, especially like my sister's amazing, and she always will shout the loudest, whoop the loudest.
Yeah.
And so I can always tell where they are, I think, based on that, because based on her chin.
I think people think it's supportive to sit on the front. That when they come watch me, they think they're helping me by sitting on the front and being really like enthusiastic. Go to the back.
Yeah.
I don't want to see you.
Yeah.
And preferably don't come. But if you're gonna come, sit at the back.
Don't be in my eye line.
My dad moves around.
Yeah, he does.
When it's a standing gig, he'll be over there. Oh, there's my dad in his hat. And then
in his Ferris and Sylvester hat.
So he had a straw hat on yesterday.
Okay.
And a Hawaiian shirt.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
And bright green shorts.
What a guy.
Yeah, strong dad wear, that is. But he moves around and he'll be over there one minute and right at the front. I don't know why he just doesn't stand still. But, you know, take the piss. But it's fantastic that they want to come and support.
This summer has actually just been the best summer of my life, I think your life. Because it's like, I don't know, if you didn't have your family and friends there to kind of have a laugh with you afterwards and come along, and suddenly it's like a big day out and everyone's
an old bastard.
Calling, heckling all the acts, and but it suddenly becomes something that is just like everyone enjoys and everyone can be a part of, and like that, if we didn't have that, then it wouldn't be as good.
Yeah, you guys have like a crazy summer. I saw some of the dates on you're like going all over the place.
Yeah, it's busy. But that's exactly, I mean, that's exactly how we want it to be. In fact, we would, you know, we're going off to Scotland tomorrow, and we've been moaning about, oh, we've got to get up there and the football's going to be on and we're going to miss it and all of this. And then we're like, actually, this time last year, we were really down in the dumps, had no team, had no one interested, couldn't really
no
get
t-shirts.
Many, no t-shirts,
yeah.
no dads whooping in the back. And then all of a sudden it's like, hang on, you've got to have some perspective. Like we're moaning about a drive up to play to thousands of people. Like you've kind of got to, you know, appreciate it. Cause it is mental for us. Like, that's huge.
Was there like a moment? Do you remember like a moment when things started to go well? Was there like one thing that started it all? Or was it really gradual?
It's funny because it still feels like we're just sort of just running in sand most of the time.
Yeah.
And there isn't, well, certainly for me, it doesn't feel like there's a moment where it suddenly started to go well. It still feels like we're running to stand still kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I guess, yeah, if you just look at our summer, like as you said last time, we had barely anything. So
I think that's a good attitude though.
The worst thing
you could do would be like, yeah, we've made it. We're big. Do you know what I mean? It wouldn't last very long if you were like that.
No.
I think in some ways though, it's a problem that we have as a pair, because we're never kind of happy with where we are. And I think we are. And sometimes we'll be like,
the happiest person ever.
But sometimes I'll be like, right, Arch, we need to go and have a beer and celebrate whatever tiny milestone it seems like we've crossed, or, you know, because it does feel big. And then you put it into perspective and then you're like, okay, it's not that big. But, you know, the first time we got on a Spotify playlist, or the first time we supported someone big, the first time we played to not our parents, and we're, you know. Yeah. They're all like tiny milestones, and even though it feels like there's such a long way to go, sometimes it is just like, look, okay, we're going to put the work away and we've got to go and actually take a second before
it's hard to tomorrow. Do that though.
It's really hard. You probably get it as well.
Yeah, but because you're in it, you're like at the centre of it, it's quite hard to get perspective on it. And
really,
it's only
hard.
Like your family and friends who are like, oh, you're doing so well, because you're in the middle of it, you don't really realise.
But you must get it a lot as well, because of the people that you support and the kind of shows you're doing, like the, you know, the big shows, and, you know, you're getting TV coverage, and, you know, that's amazing. But it still feels like there's like, it's like, guys, no, this is just like the start.
Yeah, but that's what you were saying about like family, and when they sort of go, actually, this is like, you just stop for a second, this is amazing. And, you know, that's really good, I think.
Yeah.
Well, and then, you know, we still go and play at Spiritual Bar, which is where we met, in the little bar up in Camden.
Yeah, yeah.
Where we play with a lot of our mates, and, you know, people who haven't really been discovered yet, who are so talented. The talent in that place is ridiculous, and there's no other venue that just is alive because of talent, you know. It's all free to get in, you know. People can just go and watch the music. But we always go back there because it's like, they're always the best shows.
You come back as like returning heroes.
No. No, we don't. No one gives a shit. We're just
nice though, isn't it?
We're just Archie and Izzy. Just like, oh, fucking hell, they've come back here again. I thought we'd
playing more of those shit songs.
So we got rid of them.
What's it like? Because I want to ask you about how, without wishing to make this like a couple's therapy session, what's it like working as a couple together all the time?
It's mad. It's really,
I would imagine it's quite hard. Intense.
It's so mad. Intense. It's fucking amazing and really, really, really difficult as well.
Yeah.
So hard.
We're both like really stubborn. Like, we make no, we don't try and make out like we're this like perfect.
The politeness that you have when you first meet somebody, or
that's all gone.
You're supposed to have as a sort of human being in a social environment, you know, just please and thank you, and just being generally reasonable. Yeah. That's just all gone out of the window now. The way we communicate, we're just like Neanderthals.
We
need to turn into children. Like, well, I don't think that's a good idea. Well, I do. Well, I don't. Well, I do. And then that just goes on for ages.
But what I would say, and this is where we'll probably disagree on this as well, but I see it as kind of a good thing in a way.
Yeah.
But hear me out, because, you know, when you're songwriting, for instance, you know, that for us is like the biggest part of it, because if you don't have the songs, then you're just basically making noise. So the songs is a really important thing for us to get that right. And we produce in our house. But before we even get to that stage, it goes back and forth between us all the time, from that lyric there, or that word, or that guitar part, or no, the chorus shouldn't go there. And everything is argued about because we come at it from different angles. We're not similar in any way to how we write and how we create stuff. So it's literally coming at it from two opposite sides.
Yeah.
But what that does is that then when we have a final song or whatever comes out, it is so thought through and meaty and
every
has
idea,
lots of layers.
Well, I don't know. It maybe sometimes it works. We'll see. But the songs do have is every idea that actually makes it into the song has had to struggle to get in there, and it's had an tough argument, crowd. You know, and so when it is in the song, it is the best idea that we could come up with together. Yeah. Because maybe Izzy will say something once, and so we both have an idea for a different part of a song, and it'd be a completely different idea. It's amazing how many times you've written songs, I'll have an idea that I'm like, this is just the obvious thing to do. This is what it has to do. And then Izzy will have the exact opposite idea. And then it's like, oh my God, how can you think? And then, but that's how it goes every time. But so eventually when we made the decision, it's difficult sometimes if I've had an idea and gone, this is it. And then Izzy's had an idea and I'm like, fucking bitch, that's better than my idea. but
yeah.
And then you have to sort of go.
Well, that's the thing. You have to swallow your pride. We do.
Sometimes.
I know these two guys who write comedy together, and they're like a writing duo. And they have this rule when they write together that if either one of them doesn't like anything, it's gone. They never have something that one likes and one doesn't. If one of them doesn't like it, they get rid of it.
Yeah.
So everything they're left with, they both really like.
That is good. I mean,
I think that we do that in a roundabout way. When we finish the song, we both like it.
Yeah.
But
that's hard though. If you really like an idea and then you've got to get rid of it.
Oh yeah, but I also think because songwriting's so personal, you know, if Archie was to write some lyrics or I was to write some lyrics, or you know, music is also personal, but lyrics, you know. And if you feel like something really needs to be in there, but because you're so into it and you're so involved, and if someone goes, no, that's, you know, she's like, no, that line's rubbish. I'm like, no, that line is everything. That's everything to the meaning.
Yeah.
And you do have to step away from it. You can't get too attached to things because, as you say, you know, you've both got to make the decision as to whether it works because it's a joint project, you know. But, I mean, there is so much about it that's complicated, and there's so much arguing to be done.
Yeah.
But I mean, at the end of the day, it's like, you know, I don't even remember the arguments. They're not big.
Yeah.
They're not like.
But I kind of think that, I don't know much about this, but I would imagine that part of your appeal to people is that they think it's really sweet that you are actually a couple. Do people say that to you?
I don't know. I don't know if it's sweet. I think. It's
because I know a lot of people like who would think, oh, they're not just working here, they are actually, that adds something different to it.
Yeah. I guess it's sweet, but I would hope that people might relate to it, because if they've been in a relationship, they know that it's actually not easy all the time, and that you do have to work at things, and maybe. Yeah, or maybe they just think it's sweet. If they do, let's
but there's so many, like, you know, like that Pine, that girl band, their sisters.
Yeah, that's
love
great.
For their sisters.
Yeah, you're
if they
right.
They weren't sisters.
Yeah.
I don't think they would have the same kind of.
Absolutely, yeah. But
yeah, first aid kit, their sisters.
I do think though that there's something about being really honest. You know, that the fact that it isn't perfect, you know, we've never made out like we're a perfect couple. We've never made out like we're perfect people.
Yeah.
I think the moment you try and do that, people lose sight of it, because it's not real, and people can always tell when something isn't genuine. And so even though there are bits, you know, we're very flawed in lots of different ways as a band, as people, you know, two people for other people to work with, you know, at least it's honest and real, you know.
It's not a fairy tale, definitely not. It's not like Cinderella and the handsome prince, or what's that story going on?
Cinderella and the handsome prince.
I think you confused two stories.
What the hell is that?
God, what was the Cinderella story?
Cinderella, full stop.
Yeah.
Where's the handsome prince?
But there's a fellow in the story, isn't there?
There is a fellow in the story.
Cinderella and
she loses her slipper, and
you're right,
the bloke finds it.
Geezer finds it.
Yeah, and he tries to put it on the ugly sister's feet, and they have two big feet, which you wouldn't be Cinderella, because Izzy has massive plates.
I do.
Sorry, that was unnecessary. You see, we're having an argument.
See, now we're getting into
it,
aren't we?
I do.
You're bringing it out of us now.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's not a fairy tale, and it's definitely not Cinderella.
Are there bands that you look at and think, you know, I mean, this is like really kind of lazy one to suggest, but like Fleetwood Mac or something like that. Do you look at people like that and think that's the sort of
way? Well, I look at them and love their music, but hope that we don't end up being quite as incestuous.
I mean, in terms of, obviously there's loads of people that are really inspiring, you know, if you look at their music, it's like, oh, we love that music, we love that music. But in terms of people and their careers I think, I don't know, there are loads of people, but not just in music, like successful writers and actors and people who have created stuff and are still, you know, all right and liking whoever they're working with. I mean, that's something to be said.
True. When you're writing stuff, do you listen to a lot of other people's music?
Yeah.
That's one of the most important parts of songwriting. That is something I think we agree on. Is that to write and to continue to be inspired, you have to continue to look for new music, music you've never heard before. Yeah. Take different inspirations, you know, listen to, I've never heard a song that's written about this subject, or the way that they use the lyrics here is really interesting. I'd never thought of doing that. Or even something as simple as a drum sound. You go, wow, I love that drum sound. How did they do that? And that can be inspiring. So, yeah, and it's really important. And new music, but also, it doesn't have to be new music, but music that's new to you.
Yeah.
Music that you've not heard before. Just you keep listening to the same music that you've always listened to.
Yeah.
Then I think you become stale as a songwriter.
Mm.
But also I think it's in terms of being inspired, you know, there are so many new acts and up and coming bands who are doing really, really well. And some of it is completely based on songwriting and some of it isn't. And I think for us, we're always like, we want to have the better songs. That's always been for us. It has to be about that, you know.
Yeah.
You don't want to water it down. You don't want to, you know, kind of make it appropriate for that radio or that, you know, audience or whatever.
Yeah.
Kind of, and that can happen nowadays, you know. Because
do you get pressure from the people around you to do that? Oh,
yeah.
We want you to write a song that will work for this, or I guess that's what managers want and agents want.
Well, to be honest, our management are all about just write the best fucking songs.
Because
that's it. That's how everyone's going to get success here. It's just, and I think that's why it's always worked with us, because we feel the same and that should never be compromised.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, we'd be lucky that they don't say go and write a song for Radio 1 or Radio 2.
Yeah. I guess there are a lot of music managers who are like that.
Well,
they get you to dress a certain way and
We sometimes think about what we wear. Mark was giving me some stick for wearing shorts on stage yesterday.
That is a bugbear of mine, actually, shorts on stage.
But it was like 35 degrees, so I was like, get those knees
like
out.
An outdoor festival.
Yeah.
I suppose that's all right. I had a go at a comic the other day who went on stage in shorts. It's like, honestly.
Well,
maybe that's a bit different in your outdoor festival.
Outdoor, I'd never worn shorts on stage because I agree, I don't want anybody to be offended by my knobbly knees and skinny ankles.
Yeah.
We got to a festival on Friday and I was wearing jeans and I got out of the car and just went, I can't do this.
Yeah.
It's too hot. I'm gonna die.
On Friday we actually had to come clean with the audience. It was only a 20-minute set and it was a Barn on the Farm, which is in this beautiful wooden barn, but it's so hot.
Yeah.
And two songs in, we were like, we are drowning in sweat up here. Like, I'm so sorry for you guys. I'm sorry for everyone involved. Don't come and hug us at the end.
Yeah.
Like, because you just kind of have to laugh about it because it was just so hot. I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh my God,
it's
we're going to die.
At Edinburgh Festival last year, the venue I had was so hot every night and it wasn't that big. So the audience are quite close to you. And by about 45 minutes, I could see people in the front sort of looking at how sweaty. Like, it was distracting people how much I was sweating.
I think you have to.
It's not ideal.
Do you have a towel on stage?
No, maybe I should.
You need one.
Yeah,
that's
the way. You got to get rid of it. You just got to go, excuse me, audience, I'm just going to wipe my brow.
I guess in between a song, you can just go and wipe your face.
I have to.
But even with that, like the sweating, it all kind of comes down to the same thing. I think that it can be really easy to go, you know, wear this, write this, make sure you look nice and polished, which obviously, you know, in terms of the songs and how you play them, it should always be, you know, as good as they can be. But I think in terms of everything else, I think the reason why, you know, Haim have worked so well and a lot of acts have worked really well is because they're just really real. And that has always been, to me, it's like, you know, when someone says, oh yeah, but that song, maybe it would be better if it were, you know, I don't know, cleaner or whatever. And actually it's just like, keep that part that is a bit of a question mark or people can relate to in some way. You know?
I think I think that's kind of changed in the last few, because if you look at the biggest music artists in the world, Ed Sheeran, Adele, they're not like perfect looking people
You heard the story about Adele going out to get some milk in a poncho?
No.
It literally makes me laugh so much.
She told it on the talk show,
and I was like, you're amazing. The fact that you're like the biggest pop star in the world, and she went outside without any underwear on, and the gust of wind came, and she showed everyone her full, like, no pants, full vagina.
At
bus stop.
Wow.
Yeah.
You just think, like, but that's why, you know, love you, because you write what's real.
I think you're right when audiences see through. If you're just like a made up character and you're not real, they just see straight through that.
Yeah.
And we're like, this person, that's not who they are.
Well, whenever I've like had my makeup done, for instance,
yeah,
everyone, you know, not just the team, but like people have been like, you know, why did you do that?
Oh, is that what, do you not wear makeup on stage?
I do, but a couple of times I've kind of really, really tried. Or someone's done my makeup for me, and I always just look I don't know, I kind of look, my face does not suit makeup. I look like a clown. I genuinely look like a clown. Archie came in one night and was like, what the hell has happened? And I was it's like, this is how like all the girls do it. This is how, like, you know,
yeah,
this is like Kylie Jenner. I look just like her, and it's like, obviously I don't. And you know,
but that's what people love though, isn't it, that you're not, what, you know, the stuff that makes you different, I guess, is what people like.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the point, and that's why, as you say, so many acts. There's actually a guy called Lewis Capaldi, who I think he's a great example. He's kind of like blown up in the last year, and you know, we look at lots of up and coming acts who are doing really, really well, but he's the one who seems to have just really, really kind of gone ahead of everybody else, and he's like a slightly chubby guy from Scotland.
Yeah.
And really funny, but quite awkward online. Doesn't make out like he's like the most perfect person ever. He talks about how good the food is on tour. When he went on tour with Sam Smith, he's like, the food is amazing. And I just think people are just like, yes. Food was good, wasn't it? Yeah. But people like that. That's what people grasp onto. Yeah. And it also happens that he writes and sings really good songs.
Yeah.
But that, his personality is just like completely,
I think it's more important nowadays as well.
Mm.
If you think back to like how music used to be, like Sinatra, and people knew nothing about Sinatra, like at all.
Freddie Mercury, my dad's idol is Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
I'm sure if he met Freddie Mercury, it would be a bit weird, because you don't, you know, obviously he's not how he is on stage the whole time.
Yeah.
But because there's the media, and, you know, online is such a massive part of especially music. You know, it's not like you could, you know, imagine Freddie Mercury Instagram storying.
Exactly. And having breakfast. Think about that, if Twitter was around when Sinatra was, like, what would he be tweeting? He'd have to tweet something, because you have to.
He would.
It's just weird to think about how it's all changed now.
Yeah.
You have to have a presence on those things now.
You do.
It's harder. It's actually harder, but that's probably why people like Ed Sheeran and Adele, who you say, like, probably more down to earth, or certainly more believable, as the fact that they're just who they are.
Yeah.
And more popular than 30 years ago, 40 years ago, because of the internet and social media, you do know stuff about your favourite artists that you wouldn't have known about. Jimi Hendrix. But then it was about the sort of enigma, and you believed in the story. Like, they're all just real people, fantastic people. But they all sort of got up in the morning and went for a poo, and just like everyone else does.
So that's kind of like what.
Do you ever think about that? Like,
no, but
Jimi
Hendrix. I really like this. As much as, you know, you have to be on Twitter and all this stuff, I still, you know, really like when you don't know about people.
Me too. Like,
I think someone was saying the other day about, they were talking about Harry Styles, and they were saying that he's so famous, but no one really knows. He's, I think he deliberately has made a decision to be quite,
yeah,
he's not really on there, and people don't know much about him, but he's the biggest star in the world, and that's really unusual.
I think there's a, you know, there's, I think this is the same in any industry, but in music, now that we're kind of really in it, you see that there's so many stages to success, and, you know, where we are, and for many years to come where we are, I suspect, there are certain things that you do have to do, and, because of what people want nowadays.
Yeah.
But you're right. When you get lightning years ahead, when you're like Harry Styles, or when you are, you know, Nicki Minaj and stuff, you kind of, it is really different. But it just goes to show that there are just so many like little stages. You know, I think of like really successful musicians, and I think of like, I don't know, someone who's done really well, like Maggie Rogers, who I'm gonna, we're gonna go and see in August at Coco, and she's done two sold out nights. Are you?
Yeah.
See you there.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm like, yeah, God, she's so successful. You know, she's doing so well, and I'm like, you know, that's, she is doing amazingly well. She's coming to the UK and selling out two nights at Coco. But then you've got, you know, like Ed Sheeran, who's just like, it's just mad. It's absolutely mad how different acts. I think it's great actually, but you know, you've got so many varying degrees of what people perceive as success, and you know, I think that's individual to each individual person and each act. But it's mad because I don't know. It's just when is anyone ever going to feel successful? Is it when you're playing like that? Or?
Yeah, you'll just drive yourself mad if you think like that though. If you're obviously you want to be ambitious, but if you're saying, if I'm not Ed Sheeran, I'm going to be unhappy.
Well, exactly.
That, you're just going to go mental because...
Absolutely mental. You wouldn't enjoy selling out amazing venues.
And you're playing like Brixton Academy, but you're like, why aren't I doing the
O2?
It's amazing that you're doing, you know, you've got to...
Yeah, exactly.
Some kind of...
It's tough. There's like, it's a, apparently it's quite common that when people who have become successful and they've always sort of had that goal, the nearer they get to that goal, the less it kind of means to them, and the less happy they are that about achieving it. And then, you know, when you get there, you thought that you'd be happy,
and
you actually get there and you're not, because you want the next
thing. Even more miserable because you thought that would make you happy and it hasn't.
Yeah.
So but you're even more miserable.
It's tough though. It's tough because I think that in order to get to, I don't know, Ed Sheeran's level or even, you know, below Ed Sheeran but doing really well, you have to have the mentality that you always want to take the next step, next step, next step. And you've got to be fucking driven.
Yeah.
But there has to be a line where you go, yeah, okay, actually, let's take the weekend off and just look what we did yesterday. That was fucking amazing.
Yeah.
It's tough. I'm really bad at that. Izzy's much better at it. That's part of the good thing about
But one of the most, one of the kind of hardest things I think I've ever heard from another musician is they said to me, I'm not in this to be happy.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh my God, like I think I've probably thought about that every day. And like, cause you know, you've got to be in it for the right reasons, of course, but you know, one of the reasons why it's so great doing it together is that, you know, it's, of course it's hard and it's tough and whatever, but it is, it makes us really happy.
Yeah.
It's like the best thing ever. It's like, it's like, it's so difficult, but at the end of the day, it's, oh my gosh, can you imagine like 2 years ago when we were writing in your bedroom and now we're actually doing it for a living and we're doing it together. That's amazing. And to think that a lot of people and a lot of successful people's mentality is, I am not in this for my own personal happiness.
Yeah.
It's mad.
And it is mad, yeah. I can't obviously speak for musicians, but comedians, I've certainly met a lot of very successful comedians who you look at and you think, I wouldn't change my life with your... They're not happy.
No.
They might be making a lot of money on TV all the time, but they're not happy.
Yeah.
But I think that there's a lot of, like, really simple, I don't know, kind of like things to always have in your life. And, you know, I know you, Tom, and yeah. I know that you really value your friendships.
Yeah.
And stuff like that, you know, we
but that's
really
the only
close.
Way I think you can, you know.
Yeah.
That's the only, I don't know, but the difference that I've seen from people who are successful and happy and successful and unhappy is that they have the same people around them that they had before. And
yeah.
they haven't like completely changed yeah. their whole friendship group, and they've sort of left their family, they've sort of ditched everyone and become successful.
Yeah, well, like, but it's...
Yeah, you're right.
Well, and also, we're not very cool as a couple. We're not... We don't...
Excuse me?
Well, I mean, I think you're very cool, and I think I'm very cool, but in terms of, like...
Cool.
I think you're cool,
Tom.
But,
cool, yeah.
But in
yeah,
terms
yeah.
of, like, you know,
yeah.
we're not what a lot of people would perceive as being cool. And I think
yeah.
the moment you... It can be really easy to be like, okay, well, like, maybe if I'm cool, then that could
yeah,
add
yeah.
to my success and stuff. But actually, you know, like, my best mates and your best mates and your best mates, I'm sure, like, you know, they're all people who you were friends with when you were
yeah,
little,
of course, yeah.
and you still, with my best friend, we still play like tennis together and like play Sims, and
that you play Sims together, that may be a little
make
too far.
Cookies and you know, like, I don't know, it's just it, I don't know, I think I think that if I ever tried to be cool, or when I have ever tried to be cool in my life, that has always kind of made me unhappy. Yeah.
There's a great thing that I think, I'm this may be misquoted, but I think Bono, he said something like, if you get to a stage in your life, he was talking about success in music. He was like, if you get to a stage where you're regularly having dinner and everybody around the table works for you, you probably become an arsehole. And he said that, he was giving advice to someone. And he said, just make sure that you're not surrounded by people who, like, blow smoke up your arse the whole time.
Yeah.
Because that's how you become a prick.
Yeah, absolutely. Having said that, though, a lot of the people that we've met along the way have become our really good mates.
Yeah.
But only, but not...
Yeah, you don't have to, like, fuck off.
No, but I think what is really nice is when real friendships kind of arise from
yeah.
when, you know, because it's still such early days for us. But
yeah.
it's like, you know, the guy who does our photography, Dan Harris, has become like an amazing friend of ours.
Yeah.
Or like the people who we play with, or, you know, yeah, anyone who we've worked with, or anyone who just like likes the music.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, but we're actually good mates. Let's go for a beer.
Yeah.
Let's sack off whatever we're talking about and go and have a drink. A guy from Aardman made a music video for us. And he's one of like the nicest guys ever. And I'm like, oh God, we're not gonna see him for a while. We should go out for a beer with
yeah.
him and his wife.
Right,
his girlfriend.
Sorry,
yeah.
They showed us around the Aardman Studios last week.
Is this in Bristol?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been there. Yeah, yeah.
It's
yeah.
really cool,
it's
isn't,
swift,
it?
Isn't it?
That actually, on the Chappies tour, the Chappies friends with them, and they came to watch them. They took us to the studio.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. We looked
yeah.
around there the other day. We saw Wallace. And
yeah, it's really cool.
All the boys.
There's like a box of Wallace's mouths. They've like got like smiling or like all his teeth.
You got a special treatment.
It was really.
I just
it was
found
amazing.
It. It was like in the corner. It was just a little box, and it had
yeah,
loads
yeah.
of weird mouths. Like it's open mouth, closed mouth, laughing mouth, whistling mouth.
So good. Yeah. Go
so
on.
what's sort of next for you guys?
Yeah, good lad.
It's a good way of phrasing.
Yeah, thank you.
See how I spelled that.
Good interview.
Kirsty.
Yeah.
What's your next track?
What's next? So we've been recording a lot recently. We were recording in the Paul Studios in Elephant Castle. We've got 5 or 6 new tracks that
yeah.
are being mixed. And that's they'll be out at some point soon.
You've not got a date yet or anything?
No,
no
way.
You've got a rough idea or...?
We know we'd like to get them out as soon as possible, but
yeah.
we know that... You know, that we just get really excited about it. But
yeah.
we need to put a proper plan around it and figure out the best thing to do with them, whether we release them together, whether they're singles, because nowadays, like, we just did an EP. We felt like we wanted to do another EP before we do an album.
Yeah.
So it's not quite an album, but we might just... Yeah, because of the way that Spotify works and... who
yeah.
knows what we do with them.
It's all
but
about the algorithms.
We've got a lot of material that is going to be coming soon.
Isn't there, like, a weird... sort of thing with music where there's times of the year where it's best to put stuff out.
Oh yeah. Gosh, yeah. But like, I mean,
I heard this too, but March and October, I've heard of the two times when people put albums out.
Well, and the thing is that when we put out our last EP, we didn't really have a team. Or when we started the process, we didn't have a team.
Yeah.
And we were advised a lot, and we kind of just were like, oh, for God's sake, let's just do it. And like we brought out London's Blues, which is our most popular song, on the 5th of January. Everyone was like, do not put a song out in January. Like, don't.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were like, no, we've got this. It will be fine. And it did quite well, because I think it was a quiet time of year, so... And people, you know, in the cold January, people liked it. It was quite upbeat and interesting. So it kind of captured people's imagination. But yeah, that there are times of the year to release things, I think. And it depends what song it is as well. But like, for us, these next tracks, we're really proud of them. You know, it feels like that step has been taken. And I don't know, I feel like, oh my gosh, that's us, and we made that, like, from sitting and writing to now having it there, and we don't want to waste it. You know, you kind of have to make most of all of your assets and give them the best chance to kind of work with people.
It's nerve-wracking now, though, because the last EP we recorded actually in this kitchen where we are now.
This is the Made in Streatham one.
Yeah. So this whole room was like drums and everything.
This will one day be a museum. There'll be a plaque outside.
Archie's phone. Maybe.
It was in here. We turned this whole place into a recording studio.
Yeah. How was your flatmate about that?
Well, he wasn't here most of the time. He was fine, but the neighbours upstairs, they weren't very happy. They have now just moved out, and there's new neighbours that have moved in. And we haven't met them yet, so we're hoping that they don't hate us as much as the previous ones.
Yeah.
But we did it on a real budget, and we produced it ourselves, and it's done. You know, we worked as hard as we possibly could on it, but it was really an experiment, and it's done better than we could ever have imagined, actually.
Yeah.
Which is phenomenal, but that now means that the pressure is on for the next one, because the next one, because of the last one, we've now got these facilities that are available to us that weren't available to us for the last one.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to do it in an amazing recording studio. We were able to choose our favourite producer to work with to do it. And so the pressure's on. It needs to be better than the last one.
Yeah.
It needs to be a step up. And so it's a bit nerve-wracking, actually, for it to come out.
It will be, you know. Well, I've already heard some of it today.
I
guess it's like you doing a new show. It's always that, oh God, like, what if we've got this wrong? Like, what if we think, wow, we have created a masterpiece, everybody's going to love it.
That's not what we think,
and then, yeah, but, you know, thinking that you're on the right tracks, and then all of a sudden everyone's like, oh, no, go back to playing London's Blues, you know. It's
But I guess,
scary.
I don't know, but I guess if you love it, then you've kind of done everything you can, haven't you?
That's it. That's what we've always aimed for, is that we set ourselves high standards, and as you know, we spend a lot of time discussing about the best ideas and stuff, and we push each other, and what we always hoped is that if we are the ones that need to be happy with it, you know, it's not about whether our management is happy with it, whether the radio plugger is happy with it, blah blah blah. We have to be happy with it, and we believe that if we're happy with it, it will be worth listening to. That's our sort of thought process,
but it
doesn't mean we don't listen to feedback and stuff like that, but we are the ones that have to be happy with it, because we're the ones that are then going to have to put our name on it and put it out. So that's the most important thing for us.
It's weird though, because like you know, you think about these, you know, every song is like, you know, you're putting that out there, and you don't know whether people are gonna like it or not, and there's still a long way to go, but a fair few people have listened to our stuff. And it's kind of hard to believe, you know.
Yeah.
It still is really hard to believe that people are out there listening and are continuing to listen.
Yeah,
to something
that was made in here. It's just
But that's, I guess, like, if you feel like... Because I know I definitely feel sometimes like, oh, I'm not. I don't understand why I'm being allowed to do these things.
Yeah.
I genuinely don't think I'm good enough to be doing this.
Yeah.
But then you have to go, well, there's obviously a reason people are giving you... There was a reason people like it. And
yeah.
You know, I think
sometimes it's hard to know what that reason is, though. Not with you, because I don't know why the fuck you're getting those opportunities. But no, obviously you're fantastic. But like for yourself, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. Like why do people like this?
But then you kind of think, well, I think I shouldn't overthink it because I'm obviously doing something that you know is working.
Yeah.
If I overthink it too much, that maybe that'll change.
Absolutely, yeah. and it you can't help but overthink it, and I think that's kind of. You just kind of have to accept that you're going to do that. Like,
yeah.
And then when you step back, you're like, oh, okay, I've got a clear head.
Yeah.
But, I don't know.
No, you're right. Don't overthink it.
I'm sure it'll be very successful.
And we're gigging a lot in the meantime. And
Is there a website where people can go and have a look?
Yeah, ferrisandsylvester.com. You can find all of our upcoming dates. You can listen to everything and you can get a T-shirt.
Oh wow, I'm gonna go and get a t-shirt after this. How much are the t-shirts?
How much are they online? That's 15.
Okay.
10,
we'll
10,
get,
10
we've
at
got
a
game. Is that, oh,
it's
great.
Extra, extra large.
That's the only one.
People listening to this don't know, but I'm huge.
That'd be really rude if you actually were huge. You're like, yeah, we got you.
You know,
double
you ever get that with like radio DJs and you listen to them for ages and you see a picture of them and you're like,
wow.
Yeah.
Well, the first time I saw Kirsty Young, I was like, oh my god.
Yeah, wow. I thought that about her as well. I thought she was really old for
yes.
some reason.
Yeah, me
like,
too.
An old woman.
It's because of her voice. It's like honey. It's like
and her voice is so calming.
It's so calming.
Yeah.
It puts me to sleep, and then all of a sudden you're like, I remember when. So weird. When I was younger, I used to listen to Horrid Henry on audiobook.
Oh, I used to listen to that.
So good.
Yeah.
And Miranda Richardson reads it.
Yeah.
And I had it in my head that she was some like crazy lady because she was so good at all the accents.
Yeah.
And I kind of had it in my head as being, yeah, this kind of like maybe fat, old. I don't know why. And then she's like this like gorgeous actress.
I know.
And you're like, oh God,
sad,
really?
Isn't it?
That's you?
It fucks with your head sometimes if you've had an imagination. Like, if you have an imagination, you hear a band.
Yeah.
And you imagine what they look like.
Yeah.
Right? you don't get this as much anymore because online, but, like, I used to listen to Pink Floyd. I had no fucking idea what they looked like.
Yeah.
Just because you just look at the album cover and you listen to it and you like it. And then you see a picture of Dave Gilmour or something, especially when you see him now and he's, like, bald.
I know.
Bald old bloke, you go, fucking hell, I don't know, I didn't expect that.
I always think that about Van Morrison. When you listen to him, and he sounds like this really cool. You can imagine right in the corner of a pub, like a really, like 25-year-old, really cool.
Yeah.
Like, guy like chatting up all the girls in between songs. And then you see him, he's like a complete opposite, like, miserable old man.
Don't ever judge a book, exactly.
Anyway, thank you a lot, thanks a lot for coming on.
Thanks so much, Tom.
For coming round, man. It's been really good chatting to you.
There we go, Ferris and Sylvester. Please, if you're listening, do yourself a favour and go right now to check out their music. It's brilliant and it's attracting a lot of attention at the moment. So I can't recommend it enough. As always, thanks to the people who helped with the podcast. Joel Grove for the producing, Will Shahada for the editing, and my manager Rick Hughes for help. We'll be back next week with another guest and another podcast. Keep listening, keep subscribing, and thank you.
Hold up. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.